mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
For word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott.
Come war and peace, Downton still stands and the crawl is still in it.
Nothing succeeds like excess.
You have given me back my life.
Scenes from the third season of Downton Abbey. No shortage of drama there, which Britons are already watching. And here's something to keep American audiences from wringing their hands until PBS airs the popular drama in January. New Hampshire has a peculiar link to the masterpiece classic. The story comes alive in a new exhibit at the Portsmouth Athenaeum. Downton Abbey, the Portsmouth Connection, profiles the life of Catherine Wendell and the Castle Highclere. That's the grand county estate where Downton Abbey is actually filmed and where events which inspired the program plot actually took place. Ronan Donahue is curator of the exhibit, and he spent ages cataloging more than 80 boxes of photographs and correspondence donated to the Athenaeum by the Wendell family. And he's joining us now with more. Ronan, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Catherine Wendell, born in Kittery, Maine. How did this woman end up living in an English castle?
Interesting story. She was born in Kittery, Maine, because her grandfather had a house in Kittery. He was a major in the Marine Corps and was stationed at the Navy Yard. Mother must have been visiting the family home when she gave birth in 1900 to young Catherine. Catherine and family lived most of the year in Manhattan. They had a rather handsome house on East 35th Street. Visited Portsmouth in the summers to visit Wendell family at a magnificent, now no longer standing, summer home in Newcastle, right out on the beach. And in 1911, her father, who had been a successful businessman, suddenly died. And the mother took their four children and went off to live in England, where a first cousin had previously married a wealthy Englishman and gone to live. And they all lived together at St. Albans.
Mm-hmm. And so this woman apparently met an earl.
She was the present countess has written a book about her predecessors. And when it comes to Catherine, she says that Lord Carnarvon ran into Catherine first in Gibraltar, a rather brief meeting, seems to have been very taken by her. And then they meet again when she's traveling with her mother in Istanbul, very exotic. And by the time they leave Istanbul, they apparently have decided to marry. His family isn't too happy about it because she doesn't have much money.
Mm-hmm.
There's money, enough money to support the family in England with nobody working and the boys going to Eton and Oxford and the girls being brought up sufficiently well to marry earls, both of them, but not enough money to run Highclere.
Okay, so this was not what they called the dollar princess, the woman from America who came with a lot of money and sort of helped rescue families, which apparently happened quite a bit.
Happened all the time, yes.
Late 19th century, I guess?
A little earlier, yeah. I think by 1922, that's pretty much over.
From letters and photographs, do you get an impression of what kind of young woman Catherine was?
You do. I haven't seen a lot of letters from Catherine. I get a lot of letters from all the rest of the family talking about Catherine.
Uh-huh.
I have to get down to Cambridge. I think there are more of her letters at Harvard, and I haven't seen those yet. But she's rather delicate. People talk a lot about her nerves. She eventually, later in life, becomes a Roman Catholic, and everybody says, oh, I think it's probably good for Catherine. I think she needs that stability. So I gather a rather delicate woman.
Well, you kindly sent us a few of these letters in advance, and we asked one of NHPR's reporters to read one for us. Now, this is Amanda Loader, our colleague, reading excerpts from a letter by Mary to Edith. What are they, cousins or?
They're sisters.
Oh, sisters. Okay, let's hear.
Dearest E, your letter of August 2nd and your lovely parcel both arrived yesterday. I can't thank you enough. If you could possibly know the excitement of getting perfume. It is marvelous, and I went to London to meet with Penn and G, smelling too divine. Catherine has had kind of a nervous collapse and been in a home, and Aunt Em had a sudden canker on her tongue, and they whipped her off to a home and thought it might be cancer. But it isn't. No other news. I am picking apples hard. Millions of plums, and no one wants them. and we had very little sugar for making jam. Endless love, M. P.S. We went to say goodbye to Miles. It is a real godsend that Mabel is dead.
You get the delightful language and then the little bomb at the bottom of it. Well, then, do we get, I mean, you know, obviously we get a little of the high Clara lifestyle, the prim and proper. Do we get to know what's really going on inside of that home?
Yes, we get to know what's really going on inside the family. We don't get to know what's going on downstairs. But Mary, our faithful correspondent, tells us an awful lot about what's going on upstairs. You said at the beginning, you spent an age with going through these records at the beginning. It did take an age. It was mostly because Mary wrote such marvelous letters. Mm-hmm. We would run around the Athenaeum reading them to each other. Wait till you hear this and what she says about this and what she says about that. You just couldn't read them silently to yourself. They had to be shared with everybody else.
That's the role the gossip plays, I guess, in a society. Well, the second season of Downton Abbey takes place during World War I, when the Abbey is actually turned into a recovery hospital for British soldiers. Any historical basis for that kind of a storyline?
Oh, yes. Catherine's mother-in-law, Almina, very interesting lady, who was an illegitimate daughter of Alfred de Rothschild, recognized as such, acknowledged by as such, and doted on by her father, Albert de Rothschild. He supplied the money when she said she wanted to turn Highclere into a rest home for those who were coming back from the trenches, and provide them with the most marvelous surroundings to make them feel better as soon as possible. And then later on, when she decided the specialists were better in London, Albert de Rothschild provided the money for her to build a hospital right in the center of London.
Uh-huh.
And she ran that even after the war. She became a nurse, a very good one, apparently. People were devoted to her, wrote to her for years afterwards.
So those sort of ladies turning into professions,
yeah.
I guess. That mm-hmm. happened also on the program. My historical reference, the Downton Abbey program. Now, some of the letters that you sent us also detail life at Highclere during World War II. Here is another excerpt from a separate correspondence between Mary and Edith. Let's hear it.
I dread the winter, and the horrible blackout, and the crawling about in the dark, and the short days, etc., etc. When the war is over, I shall turn on every light in the house and open every window wide just to lean out and enjoy it. Oh, how I want it to be over. How the Germans can possibly stand the bombing, I can't imagine. I wish you could hear the noise of them passing on their way over. It is like 20 express trains. Well, I'll pop this off. Again, 1,000,000,000 thanks. I wear your blue dress all the time. It is perfect and not worn a bit. Endless love to you all. M.
Oh, very moving letter.
Many of them are.
Yeah.
I hope many of your listeners will come and visit the exhibit because there are photographs of Mary and she looks exactly the way she should look. If Maggie Smith looks exactly the way the Dowager Countess should look,
Mary is Mary. Mary is Mary.
There's some of your listeners will remember Mrs. Miniver. Mary actually went out to her tennis court and took under arrest and drove to the police station a German airman who had parachuted out of his plane before it crashed, which is one of the memorable scenes in Mrs. Miniver.
Wow, I thought one of the plot lines on, Downton Abbey were a little far-fetched, but that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now, Ronan, why do you think we are so fascinated? I mean, you loved looking at these letters and discovering this woman, Catherine Wendell, life so removed from our own. Why are listeners and why are visitors to the Athenaeum so captivated by this?
I think because, as with celebrities, we're all the same. And you don't have to look very long before you realize that there's a great similarity. The lives aren't really all that different. And it's delightful to find that although the surroundings are so different, although the financial situation is so different, that the people are pretty much the same and that you can identify with them. But in this case, I think the acting and the writing is so superb that people easily get wrapped up in the story of Downton Abbey.
Well, I have to tell people that although we have to wait until January, I am one of those people who doesn't mind spoilers and reads ahead on The Guardian UK. Ronan, I want to thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks very much, Virginia.
Ronan Donahue is a retired history teacher. He's curator of Downton Abbey, the Portsmouth Connection, which opens at the Portsmouth Athenaeum on October 5th and runs until December 1st. Really, go and take a look for yourself. The gallery is going to be available to the public on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays from 1 until 4. And special thanks to Amanda Loader, who helped bring the voices alive on this segment. You can find more on the third season of Downton Abbey and the exhibit at wordofmouthradio.org. Now, in just a few minutes, the Jerusalem Music Festival brings together a surprising mix of Middle Eastern music. That's when Word of Mouth continues.